You're listening to The World's Talking with Dave O'Grady. Don't forget, if you have a story, an internet forum, a discussion you want to have, email theworldstalking@gmail.com. That's theworldstalking@gmail.com. Don't forget to click like on Facebook, like on Twitter, like on everything, and we'll chat to you then. You're very welcome along to Talking GAA with Dave O'Grady. This is episode 4 in our podcast series, and I'm delighted to be joined once again by Emmett of Action81.com. Emmett's from Dublin. How's it going, Emmett? Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Dave. Great to be here again.
We're delighted to be joined once again by Owen in Kerry. Owen, are you well? You're keeping well down in Kerry. Weather's nice there today, is it?
Like a summer's day, Dave. Like a summer's day.
I love it. And making his debut on Talking GAA is, of course, your neighbour, Owen, all the way from the Rebel County in Cork. Graham, you're very welcome to the show.
Yeah, good evening, lads. How are we getting on?
Not too bad. Well, I want to get down to business, lads. And let's firstly, I want to come to you, Emmett. And you've been on to me all week since you've seen the Crossmaglen Rangers match against Ballon Derry there at the start of the week. Crossmaglen Rangers, really, they edged Ballanderry at the death, 17 points to 110, the final score there. What did you make of this game? I guess a lot of people are saying, you know, the 4 points might have seen a comfortable margin, but it was really the minimum between the teams, really, with 7 minutes left after Ballanderry had turned kind of a magnificent backs to the wall second half, it's probably fair to say.
Yeah, it was a very interesting game, Dave, because so most people, when they think Ulster football, they think of defence, basically, and the way that teams are used to sort of, you know, pulling around the ball and for trying to get the ball up front. Crossmaglen are pretty much the opposite of that. Crossmaglen try to swarm in attack and try to overwhelm teams with as many players up front as possible. And the first half yesterday, it worked a treat. They went in at the break 11 points to 4 up, and I don't think Ballanderry really knew what hit them, because Ballanderry went into that game with a pretty strong defensive pedigree. They were known as being able to hold out, you know, most teams, especially in the early going. But really, Aaron Kern in particular was sort of a driving force from defence going forward. And you rightly saw, like, of the 10 Crossmaglen players into the Ballanderry half. And it didn't look for most of the first half like Ballanderry really had any response. The only player who looked really capable of threatening Crossmaglen at the back was Raymond Wilkinson.
Yeah.
But in the second half, Dave, we really saw how smart Ballanderry could be when they tried to turn it on. Because Cross kept pushing the players forward, but Ballanderry became a really good counter-puncher. I suppose it's sort of like the way Byron Grigan used to box, if we're fans of that vintage.
Yeah.
They're very impressive counter-punchers. They really, really couldn't. Cross, again, at the quick break, they were really susceptible. And Ballanderry kept them working with Wilkinson, with Colin Devlin, who came off the bench, Conor Gilligan as well. They just kept on passing the ball through Crossmaglen's defence and getting balls over the bar. And that was a huge, huge difference. Got them within a point eventually when Gilligan converted the penalty. And eventually, though, we saw just why Crossmaglen have won 4 of the last 5 Ulster titles, why they're the reigning All-Ireland champions, because they have got the forwards who can score in droves. Oisín McConville, Stephen and Tony Kernan, when the pressure was on, they came good. They got the points to push it out in the end. And over 60 minutes, Cross were the better side. But I think a lot of teams watching that game, especially as it was on TG Carr, will have said, we've seen a Crossmaglen are a very dangerous team, a very talented team, but they're by no means invulnerable, and they can definitely be taken in this championship.
Yeah, that's what I seem to be picking up from a lot of reports on the game, Emmett, that Crossmaglen, even though a lot of people say their experience would have got them across the line, of course, All-Ireland champions at the moment, do you think now going forward that this team is actually there for the taking now?
I still think they're going to win Ulster, is the thing. And, of course, that puts them only 2 games away from winning another All-Ireland title. We've got Byrne and Latton on the other side of Ulster, who I don't think are going to be able to do to Crossmaglen what Ballanderry did in the second half yesterday. But when it gets to the All-Ireland stage, you're going to have the other provincial champions. If I'm correct with the draw, Bridget's of Dublin and the rest of the Leinster teams, although Bridget's are obviously the favourites now in Leinster after the convincing showing yesterday, they can't face Cross until the final. And I think the better defensive outfits I've seen going around the country this year have definitely come from the Leinster side of the draw. So if they come up against the Leinster champions at any point, it could get very interesting. Of course, that said, there will still be other threats out there. But until they face a team, really, who can counterpunch the way we saw Ballanderry counterpunch, it's going to be very hard to see anyone beating Crossmaglen, given the sheer way in which they attack.
It's going to be an interesting one. And just I want to move down south, really, and go to Graham. And Graham, you were talking a little bit about Crosheen's victory over at Carrigtwohill. I guess it was really an excellent second half performance from Crosheen in their first ever Munster Club hurling final, which was at Páirc Uí Chaoimh earlier in the week. Is there a case to be said about, I mean, looking at Carrick Toohill going out of the Munster Club Hurling Championship, you know, there seems to be a bit of a bad record by Cork clubs in the campaign.
Yeah, it's a very disappointing record for Cork clubs. I mean, Cork clubs dominated the All-Ireland Club Championship in the early 70s. I mean, you had Blackrock winning 3, Glen Rovers 1-2, and the Bars 1-2. And it's been a famine since then. A lot of it you could probably put down to the fact that City Hurling in Cork is declining at an alarming rate. I mean, when Cork won the 3 in a row in the 70s, the team was dominated by players from Blackrock, the Glen, and the Bars. You know, yeah. There's Ray Cummins, Barry Murphy, you know, and the hurling in the city is declining. You know, I suppose you could also put it down to the fact that the county is so big that maybe the talent is spread out way over the city and the county, and that, you know, you look at the club championships themselves, not too many Kerry clubs have done well in the football either, or not too many Tipperary clubs have done well in the hurling. It seems to be suiting counties with maybe small pockets of 4 or 5 big clubs, where, you know, you might have 3 or 4 inter-county players from each club, whereas in Cork, you know, you could put together a senior hurling team with 15 lads from 15 different clubs.
Yeah.
I mean, Newtown bucked a trend there in 2004. They won 2 Munster Club and they won in All-Ireland. But really, it's been very, very poor. I mean, Kerry 2 were probably actually in bonus territory this year because, I mean, they were 100-1 outsiders to win the county. And, you know, the gap between them playing the county final and the Munster Championship game was almost 6 weeks. And I think that told on them really in the end, you know.
And a quick point about actually Croisín going forward, that'll be a boost for Clare Hurling, really, I suppose, Graeme, because, I mean, Clare Hurling will be looking to take everything they can. I mean, obviously, we've read the stories about all the up-and-coming young Clare hurlers that seem to have been coming out of nowhere. They've been doing a lot of work, you know, at the underage level, but this is, a good step for them and a scalp.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, the fact that Ballygunner were beaten as well is a huge incentive to them. The Pearshig were real rank outsiders to beat Ballygunner. So I presume Croisín would probably be slight favourites going into that game. The Pearshig were real dark horses in this championship. You'd have thought Ballygunner would have won the Munster Championship looking at what came out of the other counties. And I think Ballygunner probably would have maybe had their eyes set on maybe St. Patrick's Day as well, because, you know, they were a very strong Waterford side, and very disappointing for them not to come out of Munster.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one to see now going forward. Owen, I want to go to you because you took a look at the old Wicklow Senior Football Championship final. What did you make of that one? I mean, usually these games in Wicklow are they're tough, they're physical. Sometimes they're not that pretty. What about this year's final? What did you think?
Not pretty, but quite exciting, with St. Mary's winning their first ever title, beating the most fancied Rathnew. St. Mary's only started this year their amalgamation between two intermediate clubs, Shillelagh and Coolkenna, and they're actually managed by Carl O'Dwyer, the famous Mick O'Dwyer's son and the former Kildare All-Star.
I think a point about that, Owen, is we were very we were shocked, well, not so much shocked when we seen the amalgamation of the two clubs to get in there, but it seems to be paying off, and perhaps it'll make Wicklow football stronger as a whole.
It will, I believe. In 1985, Baltinglass went on a 9-in-a-row county championship winning team. That was interrupted in 96, and Rathnew went on to win an 8-in-a-row. So club football has been dominated by club teams for the last 20 years or so. So it's great to see in the last 8 years, there's been 5 different winners. So now maybe a few more amalgamations. The senior clubs seem to be getting that bit more competitive, and hopefully then it will open it up a bit.
Of course, a point on Wicklow with the clubs own. You tend to see a lot of players that are particularly in clubs around the border of Wicklow with the other counties. They seem to kind of drift in and out, and, you know, I guess they could never really tie down a stronghold there. That's probably been one of the reasons why several of these clubs are amalgamating.
Absolutely, yeah, and the west of Wicklow have always stuck together very strongly that way, and there's a big east-west divide in Wicklow, but St. Mary's, they won it now, and maybe it'll encourage other clubs maybe to join up and whatnot. But right now, they still go into Leinster Championships, and St. Mary's are an amalgamation, and they will have to pull their socks up because they have Portlaoise next Sunday, and they won't get anything easy there.
They certainly won't. Well, lads, I want to talk about the whole Donegal situation with the Kevin Cassidy being kicked off the panel. Emmett, it's a bit of a bizarre one. It was mentioned in the book, perhaps some criticisms Kevin Cassidy had towards maybe the managerial style of McGuinness or that in Donegal. What do you make of this whole thing? Do you think it's a little bit harsh him being thrown off the panel? A lot of people are saying come championship, Kevin Cassidy will be playing for Donegal.
Well, I've got to be very careful what I say, because I do write the Donegal yearbook, so I'm going to be very diplomatic. But basically, from what little my understanding is, from what I can tell, very much so, an awful lot of the reportages you've seen so far has been based on very little information, because both sides, you know, Cassidy and Donegal team, aren't being terribly clear about sort of, you know, the full extent of what happened and what went down. So I think sort of, you know, if we ever really know the full story, it'd be a bit rash to jump to conclusions. Like, remember, Cassidy had retired before and was encouraged back by McGuinness. And there are, like, you know, some obvious situations there with Cassidy that, like, you know, some time off the panel would help to heal some of the wounds of any sort of the issues that were caused there. So while obviously he's off the panel for now, I think, you know, it is a presumptuous for us to assume that he will not be back by the summer. It is also the way equally presumptuous to assume that he will be back by the summer. Like, I think, you know, when cooler heads prevail over the new year, we might see, you know, Jim McGuinness, you might see Kevin Cassidy sit down and talk to each other, look at the situation. If the two of them are, you know, happy to proceed as it is with Kevin not on the panel, so be it. But if they feel that, like, maybe he can still contribute and, like, they can find a way to work together, then maybe he can play a role. I think, you know, it was very much a November GA story in that something happened at the county level. We need to talk an awful lot about it. So we don't know in November what's going to happen in May with the county team. And, like, you know, like, players are technically not going to be training for them, of course. We'll see how much of that happens. But so I think, you know, there's a long way to go in this story yet. I think, you know, when there's been time for both sides to settle, when this story has gone off the radar for a while, and it will go off the radar as we get to the interprovincial club finals, as we get to the business end of the club championship. And I think when that takes over the sort of the narrative, so to speak, I think, you know, there'll be time for this story to rest and for, you know, the Donegal players to come back in and talk. And we could well see Kevin Cassidy stay off the panel, but I think there will be further talks yet before we have a real final resolution on this.
Yeah, that's a beautiful answer there. It has to be said, Evan. You sound a bit like a politician. You've been practicing that one. It's probably fair to say. I want to bring that one to Graham. Graham, obviously, we had the politics there. I love a bit of politics now in that when you get, and that's a lot of, you get that throughout GAA circles. You're not allowed to say this about Billy Joe and Jack. But what about the point that was made, Graham, in defence of Jimmy McGuinness? What goes on in the dressing room should stay in the dressing room, and that should be across the board. What do you think about that point?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's crazy. I mean, he was the best player they had last year, and I mean, they don't have a lot of real talented forwards that or backs that like to attack. They're a very defensive side. He was the best scorer of the game he got last year. I mean, we've had plenty of politics down here in Cork, and it was probably maybe one of the reasons why Sean O'Neill didn't get on the Cork Senior Hurling panel last year. Was he done an interview on a newspaper, I think, and came out and said that Donal O'Grady was the best manager he ever worked with and ever will work with, and I don't think it went down too well with the manager that was there last year, and maybe it was one of the reasons why he didn't get on the Cork Hurling panel. I can see this thing being sorted out. I think it was just, as Emmett said there a while ago, it was a quiet week in GAA and a story needed to be put out there, and I think that was probably it, you know?
Yeah, and they certainly got their scoop. What do you think about this whole thing on, obviously they needed their scoop. It is a popular GAA story, and as Emmett was saying, when something like this breaks at inter-county level, you're always going to get it. Graham knows all too well from the situations in Cork. The same thing happened in Galway when brothers had a row in 2001, and then they came back for the championship and they won the All-Ireland. Do you think this kind of thing is just for Colm Inch's, or do you think there's something more to this? Do you think we won't see perhaps Kevin Cassidy back in that Donegal panel come championship?
I cannot believe this story, Dave. Jim McGuinness all year has been so astute, very professional approach. It was no secret Kevin Cassidy was writing a book, I cannot believe that he did not read that book before it was published. It looks very amateurish towards Jim McGuinness, and I think you shouldn't divulge secrets, but I think Jimmy McGuinness should have had a look at that book before it was printed.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah, fair enough. I mean, that a lot of people seem to be taking that point, and that debate will go on, and it'll be interesting to see come league time what kind of team Donegal will be fielding. There's no doubt there's a lot of younger players, particularly from that under 21 team, that are going to get the L boost into senior level, and that'll probably be McGuinness's excuse or that. But come championship, when you need the full senior players in the squad, it will be an interesting one. Pat Gilroy staying on as Dublin manager. It was probably the worst kept rumour in the whole country, Emmett. It's a good decision for Pat, I suppose, and a good decision for Dublin to get him. He brought them to where they haven't been in such a long time, since 95. Job done. It's going to be even harder this year for him.
It is going to be harder for him this year because, as we've seen, the only team in the last decade in the last 20 years, I recall, to retain the All-Ireland title. I know Sharon can tell you, well, that's definitely Kerry, like they've done that. But back-to-back All-Ireland is particularly difficult as tasks go. And so for Gilroy, obviously, that's a challenge in its own right. The last Dublin manager, of course, to win All-Ireland, Pat O'Neill, stepped down straight afterwards. And obviously, there's that temptation for Gilroy. But I think he knows himself, the system he has with his team, they have the potential to possibly win another All-Ireland in the next year or two. Like, I think everybody would say it'll be very difficult to defend this year, but certainly within the next 2 years, second All-Ireland is definitely within their grasp. And I think Gilroy was looking at it the case of that'll be a 5-year commitment by him in total. And if he lasts 5 years, that's a pretty long stint by inter-county manager levels these days. You don't see many guys doing what we see Conor Coonan and Mickey Hart and Jack O'Connor with those extended stays. And if Gilroy managed to get a second All-Ireland inside of a 5-year span as manager, I think he could step down very happy and probably not pay for a pint on inside of County Dublin again.
Yeah. Owen, what about the point regarding Pat Gilroy in the sense that this time round, it's very hard in football to win an All-Ireland back-to-back. We know it can be done in hurling because, fair enough, there's lesser amount of counties that are actually participating for an All-Ireland, and it's easier for a strong county to actually win back-to-back. But in football, you know, we've got teams from the four corners of the country playing for it. And the fact that, you know, if we looked at the Dublin team in the championship, Owen, Pat Gilroy played down every single match as, you know, we're in bonus territory now, or we'll go out there and we'll do our best. Obviously, say Tyrone are overwhelming favourites, or the Donegal game, you know, they'll be going into this high of confidence. We just want a good performance out of our lads. You know, he played down the Dubs' chances, and that kind of worked to their benefits. He's not going to be able to do it come next year's championship. So it's going to be a lot harder for him right through Leinster, I suppose, Owen.
Absolutely. Everyone is going to be looking for the scalp of the All-Ireland champions from now on. But Dublin are a solid team. And I still, even though they won the All-Ireland last year, I even think they're only at 80% at the moment. I really do think they can improve. I don't think they'll win back-to-back. But as Emmett said earlier, they will win an All-Ireland within the next 3-4 years. Football is flying in Dublin. Club football is getting very strong. The interest is there, and I'm delighted Gilroy's staying on because maybe he can bring back this type of FO's army style.
Yeah, and just a final point on Pat Gilroy to yourself, Graeme. Obviously, with Cork, we've seen the likes of Conor Coonan, and he had kind of done a similar approach to Pat Gilroy when Cork won the All-Ireland last year. Coonan was very honest in his way, you know, he took things slowly, and, you know, he didn't expect too much out of his players. He just asked that they go out and do their best, and they set up defensively a good defence as well. What do you think are Pat's chances of actually getting the Dubs back into, say, an All-Ireland semi-final and maybe a final? Do you think it's going to be extra hard this year?
It'll be a bit extra hard, but there's a huge monkey off Dublin's back now after winning in All-Ireland. I mean, the pressure on them must have been something else. I mean, it's a bit akin to England in the football, the media pressure that's on them. They have the All-Ireland one. They're in bonus territory now. I think they'll be favourites for the All-Ireland next year. If you look at what's around, Kerry are kind of, you don't know what to expect from them. Cork would probably be the side that might put up the biggest fight to Dublin if they can get over the injury problems that they had last year. Really, they were running on empty come the August last year. Lots of players were carrying severe injuries. They were running out of forwards. So it's probably between the two of them to be the favourites. But I just simply think Dublin should be favourites to win the All-Ireland next year. And, you know, I could see them adding back-to-back titles. They definitely will be there or thereabouts. Who's there to take on Dublin? I mean, you know, yeah. That is the question. Is Kerry, is Cork, is Tyrone? After that, who is there, you know?
And I guess, the point being that Dublin probably have the most depth of a squad in terms of the younger players coming through. It's going to be exciting. Just while I have you there, Graham, I want to just flash back to hurling and Jimmy Barry Murphy's return as Cork manager. We have Sean Oak back into the team as well. What do you make of this whole thing? Are we going to see a resurgence in Cork hurling, or is it going to be a little more painful again? What do you reckon?
Yeah, there's a lot of optimism around the county with Barry Murphy coming back, but I think it's the fact that he is back. You know, he brings an aura to the game. He brings, you know, paper inches he covers. I mean, if the Cork hurling team were playing a challenge match tonight somewhere in the city, you know, there'd be an extra couple of thousand would go because he's in charge. They're training away out in the CIT at the moment, and a pal of mine was out there doing a night class, and he popped over to have a look at him, and Barry Murphy was wearing his 1999 All-Ireland winning tracksuit top with the ESAT Digiphone. And he had a quick look.
Dennis O'Brien will be happy with that one.
Exactly, yeah. And he had a look at some of them training. They were doing fierce physical training. Sean Og apparently was the fittest man of the lot. So there's a lot of nostalgia around, but you've got to get down to brass tacks. I mean, underage hurling in Cork is at famine level. We haven't won a minor or an under-21. And when Barry Murphy was successful with the All-Ireland winning side in 99, he had a fierce conveyor belt of talent coming up. The likes of Joe Dean, Ben O'Connor, Donal O'Cusack, Dermot O'Sullivan's. They were all hitting the 19-20 age bracket that time. He hasn't got the same players. And probably the best young hurler in the country at the moment, or in the county, sorry, is Aidan Walsh. And he has decided to stick with the football for the time being. So he would be a savage addition if he could talk him around come May, June or July, you know.
That used to be a problem for actually hurling in Cork, because a lot of people, you know, it would have been hurling, I suppose. Going back to Owen, and on the final point I want to talk to on this episode of the show, lads, is the recent violence in some club games and that. And we've seen, Owen, we've seen violence in the Tyrone League finals. There's been referees attacked in Antrim and London recently. This kind of thing has cropped its head in GAA over the past few years. It's snuck in. A lot of games that, I suppose, don't seem to be on radar, on the media radar, this kind of thing seems to erupt at. Do you think this is a problem? It's going to get worse? Or do you think the GAA are doing enough to tackle it?
I think the Antrim County Board actually are really taking it there. They've handed down 72 and 96 week bans and 4 expulsions from the GAA. So they're really, really laying down the law. London the same. Paul Geraghty, he was man of the match against Mayo last year. He was man of the match against Fermanagh in the championship as well last year. He got a 96 week ban for allegedly striking a referee. And they are the bans that have to be handed down. But When you're maybe a fine for clubs would force clubs into keeping their members to behave themselves. Well, one that I'd really like to see in the Tyrone League final there, Dromore and Carrickmore, maybe a demotion from senior down to intermediate, an automatic relegation from a grade if you're found guilty of striking officials, because without officials, there's no games.
And Owen, would you agree with the point that, you know, I mean, you've probably seen a few of these type of games down in Kerry, and I know some of this happens in hurling circles down in Kerry, that, say, things boil over and officials and umpires get it, you know, they might take a punch here and there or that kind of thing. Do you think it's a problem in terms of it's always seems to be the matches that don't have the media hype, where maybe players and managers and people on the sidelines think that they can get away with it?
Look, Dave, we've all been there. I've often roared at a referee and called him a wally or whatever, but I would never lay my hands on an official. I've often got very angry with him during games, but there has to be a line. I think every referee knows going out in the field, he's going to get a bit of verbal, but physical assault is just a no-no. and anyone found guilty of it, not only the player, but the club, should be severely punished.
Yeah, Emmett, would you go along with Owen there, you know, that they should severely punish these teams? And as Owen was suggesting, perhaps, you know, for a club players or a club team to be actually downgraded from, say, senior to intermediate if this kind of thing goes on?
Absolutely, Dave. I think, frankly, like, the only option is to develop a situation where the punishment to clubs in particular is one that will make the clubs take preemptive action. That is a threat of expulsion down a grade. That is a threat of, you know, your season from above a certain age group being cancelled for all teams. Essentially, you know, put a situation out there where clubs know that it's in their interest to keep an eye on who your, shall we say, more questionable supporters are before a game happens, because it's not like these are complete strangers coming along to cause trouble at matches, to assault referees. People in the club know these people. They know they might be hotheads. They might be prone to doing something particularly, you know, dodgy, like, you know, obviously going as far as assaulting a referee. You might go, oh, well, he wouldn't do that. Well, make sure he wouldn't do that, basically. Take the action in advance to make sure that, like, you know, the warnings are out there, and that also that your club can police itself, essentially, because referees shouldn't have to rely on the odd steward coming in to save his hide when somebody goes crazy. The players in that club themselves should be thinking, if that guy gets to referee, I don't play again this year, I don't play senior next year. That's the level of thinking we need to have for clubs. Frankly, severe, hard punishments is the only way to really stop this from happening. Because frankly, like, it reflects terribly on the clubs, it reflects terribly on the game. And like, we aren't naming, even the way we're discussing this, we aren't naming the clubs where it's happening. We're naming the counties. So we're thinking Tyrone, we're thinking Antrim.
Like, yeah.
Clubs involved. And that reflects badly in those county boards. So that's why this self-policing should be in place, because it reflects badly on the way the game is played in these counties, even though we all know the vast majority of players and clubs and fans are well-behaved. But the one or two agents can become particularly dangerous agents. So we need severe policing to make sure that they don't become problems, essentially.
Okay, well, we'll monitor that one as it develops. Well, that's the end of our show this evening. I want to thank Owen in Kerry. Thanks, Owen.
Cheers, boys.
Thanks a million, Emmett in Dublin and Action81.com.
Thanks, Dave.
And also Graham for making your debut on the show. You've been absolutely brilliant all the way in the Rebel County in Cork. Thanks, Graham.
Good night, lads.
You're listening to The World's Talking with Dave O'Grady. Don't forget, if you have a story, an internet forum, a discussion you want to have, email theworldstalking@gmail.com. That's theworldstalking@gmail.com. Don't forget to click like on Facebook, like on Twitter, like on everything, and we'll chat to you then.